The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Good afternoon and welcome to Frankly Speaking About Cancer with the Cancer Support Community. Your host is Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community. This hour is designed to inspire, inform, and to help you live better with cancer. Now, here's your host, Kim Tibaldo.
Welcome to Frankly Speaking About Cancer, an internet radio show that focuses on informing and inspiring people to live well with cancer. I'm Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community. The Wellness Community and Gildas Club have united to become the Cancer Support Community, one of the largest providers of cancer support in the United States and around the world. Our services are offered at more than 170 locations worldwide and online at www.cancersupportcommunity.org. Today's show is sponsored in part by Celgene, Lilly Oncology, and Onyx. Well, parenting with cancer can be a major challenge for many who are diagnosed. It often requires a balance of looking out for your own health while simultaneously being aware of the effects on the family structure. And, you know, often children of different ages react quite differently to a parent's diagnosis. On this episode of Frankly Speaking About Cancer, we will explore the unique challenges of being a teenager when your parent is diagnosed with cancer. Today's show features Mark and Maya Silver, father and daughter, who co-wrote the book, My Parent Has Cancer and It Really Sucks. In their book, Mark and Maya reflect on their own personal experiences to offer insights on the difficulties of being a teen whose parent is diagnosed with cancer. Welcome, Mark.
Hi, Kim. Great to be with you.
And welcome to you, Maya.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Let's get started, Maya. I want to start with you. To begin, why don't we talk about your own experiences with cancer in the family? Maya, what was it like for you when you found out your mom had cancer? Take us kind of back to that time and what was going on in your life and your family, and talk a little bit about how you reacted to that.
Sure. Well, I was starting the ninth grade, so I thought I was pretty much the most important thing in the world at the time. And the way my parents told me was actually a really great way. I didn't know it at the time, but what they did was, I think it was at the end of our first week of school, they both picked up me and my sister, and they sort of turned to the back seat and just said, you know, this is what's been happening. Mom was diagnosed. We don't know all the information. And there was a lot of disbelief, like, oh, my God, is this really happening to me? Does this mean Mom's going to die? But, you know, my parents were really good about communicating honestly about her diagnosis. And so quickly we sort of had our fears alleviated that she was going anywhere. We got the, you know, rundown of what the treatment would be like and surgeries, and they kept us posted and abreast of everything. And so, you know, sort of the hyperbolic reaction sort of faded slowly yeah. after that. It did kind of feel like the whole world was crashing down on us, because the next week, I think, was 9/11 and the school was evacuated. And I was like, oh, my God, my mom has breast cancer in 9/11. You know, after that, it was, you know, my way of dealing with it kind of changed. And it wasn't that I was in denial, but I just really wanted to keep my life going. I didn't really want to talk about it or be that kid whose mom had cancer. And so I didn't want to be stigmatized by it. So I dealt with it really quietly and just tried to keep my life going, which is something we've seen in a lot of teens that we interviewed.
Just wanting things to stay normal.
Mm-hmm. Your identity doesn't become defined by it. You're still
as normal as things can be when you're a teenager, I guess, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Mark, I know you have another daughter. When your wife was diagnosed, what was the age difference between your other daughter and Maya? And, you know, did she react differently, and to what might you attribute that?
She's the younger daughter, Daniela, who was 12 on the verge of turning 13 when we got the news that Marcia had breast cancer. And, I mean, they both seem to react to us as parents. It seemed like they reacted kind of the same in some ways. They just kind of lived their normal teenage lives and went on with things. But later, in as time went on, we talked to them more, you know, years afterwards. We discovered that there were differences. I know one thing Daniela did that we didn't know at the time, she was going to a Jewish day school, and they would have morning prayers, and each morning she would ask her friends to say a prayer for Marcia. And it's like such a beautiful gesture, and she told me it was her way of trying to get some sense of control in a situation that seemed out of control and trying to do something that might be helpful. So people react in different ways, but I think teenagers often react by acting like teenagers, which, as any parent knows, is tough.
Yeah. No, but it's...
And one thing Maya said, if I can get back to you, know, we didn't plan to tell them in the car as like, wow, this is the best place to tell them. But when we started doing research for the book, a lot of people said, you know, the car is a great place to have a conversation with your kids because you got a captive audience. It's like they can't run out and storm into their room and close the door or leave the house. And you don't have to make eye contact, which also is helpful sometimes because it's a really intense word. Cancer is a scary, scary word, and it scares adults, and it scares kids and teenagers because they pick up their cues from their adults. So to have a conversation where you're not sitting around the table staring each other in the face was actually a bit easier, I think, for all of us.
It's interesting. I wonder how our many, many counselors at CSC would react to that. We have a lot of them. We have hundreds of them, so I might have to do a little survey about that. but I think it's really interesting. Maybe there'll be a new form of mobile therapy that's happening, and it doesn't have to do with your telephone.
Yeah.
Right. I want to ask both of you, Maya, I'll start with you, but the book, My Parent Has Cancer and It Really Sucks, is aimed at teens that have a parent who's facing a cancer diagnosis. In your research and in writing the book and in your learnings, what are some of the ways that teens tend to react differently to the situation than maybe younger children or older children? I think you gave us a little bit of a clue into that window when you said, I was in the ninth grade and I thought that the world revolved around me. So,
right.
You know, that might help to frame the reaction a little bit.
Well, I mean, what we found is that teens have a much more diverse range of emotions that they experience. So it's not just sadness and fear. It's also guilt and misunderstanding and just really identity kind of crisis feelings because, you know, they want to be there for their parents, or they don't know that they do, but they feel like they should. And oftentimes they're not. They want to go out and continue living their teenage life and hanging out with their friends and not being at home all the time. And so when they don't do those things, there's a lot of guilt involved. Like, I should be at home, but I don't want to, so I'm not going to. And then just feeling like, you know, teens have a lot of different range of feelings. Like, some teens we encountered wanted the other parent to have cancer because they were closer with the other parent. So their mom had breast cancer, for example, but they wished it was their dad because they were closer with their mom. And so they're experiencing these, you know, kind of crazy emotions that make them feel like maybe bad people. And so a lot of what we try to do is normalize those types of emotions. Like, there are other teens feeling this way. It doesn't mean you're a bad person. Like, it's normal that you don't want to be at home. And so it's just a lot more complex, I think. And, you know, compared to older adults, I'm not really sure exactly how that would compare, but I think there's a lot of misinformation with teens, and they do a lot of, probably these days even more so, Googling and just looking for information online, and what they find isn't always relevant. And so they probably, you know, a lot of them had distorted understandings of what was going to happen to their parent when they first found out that their parent was diagnosed. Like, they looked something up online, or a friend told them, oh, well, you know, people with cancer die, things like that. And so we try to, in our book, have some information that's teen-friendly and sort of bust some of those myths and addresses common misconceptions.
Yeah. I think that, as you said, sort of we're teens are in this space where they're incredibly self-involved. I remember talking to one mother who was going through chemotherapy and lost her hair. And she told me that her daughter asked her to drop her off a block away from school.
Because
she didn't want her friends to see her mom with no hair. And, you know, her mom was one of those moms who said, I'm not wearing a wig. I'm not wearing a scarf. I'm not going to do, you know, that's, it's not comfortable. It's hot. It's, you know, this is kind of what I'm going through right now. This is my reality. And she just, the daughter wanted nothing to do with anybody seeing her mom that way, you know, without hair. So, you know, again, not taking sort of the mom situation into account, but sort of how are my friends going to react to this? That was sort of the driving.
Right.
Yeah, and what we hope is that, like, parents would read the book and understand this too. Like, you would think, oh my God, how could my kid think that? But in fact, that's like Maya was saying, that's a normal reaction for a teenager to have. They don't want to be the one with the bald mom or the bald dad because of chemotherapy. And if a parent can kind of understand that, that it's not coming from a place of dislike or hatred, it's just like an honest reaction that these kids are in a stage where they don't want to stand out. And that's one of the things that was so interesting in doing this book, that in a way you'd think, oh, it would be so much harder for a young kid to face a parent's cancer. But a lot of the specialists and experts we interviewed said it's really very, very tough for teens because they're in a stage where they're pulling away from the family and they're forming their own identity, so they're out with their friends, they're doing their own thing, and then all of a sudden here comes this disease, this cancer, and it kind of yanks them back into the family fold, you know, against their wishes. So it creates a lot of tension and a lot of difficult situations and reactions that both teens and parents might not understand at first.
Yeah, yeah. We've got just a couple minutes till our first break here, but Maya, certainly one of the most valuable aspects of this book is your collaboration, you know, with your father. It brings together this perspective of a parent and a teen. Tell me just for a minute or two about that collaborative process and how you felt your father's perspective as a parent helped in both guiding your experience and in being a collaborator on the book.
Sure. Well, obviously, I don't have any children, so I don't have a really great, you know, perspective on how, you know, best parenting practices and sort of family dynamics. Like, I, you know, what I know is from limited experience, is just from being raised by my parents, but not by raising my own kids. And so I think my dad brought a lot of just experience with best practices with communication and how to deal with school and how to deal with the, you know, really traumatic thing like a dire prognosis. Just his life perspective and his experience as a parent, I think, is something that I couldn't really fulfill just from my own limitations in that field. So that was really helpful. And it was really wonderful to collaborate with him. We sort of divided up the chapters and we look at the chapters each other wrote and sort of meld our voices. And the feedback he had for, you know, my chapters was super valuable. And I think it made it a better book to have us working on it together.
Mark, we've got a couple minutes, but I'd ask you to weigh in. Tell me about the process and what it was like.
Google Docs, they saved our life because it's like you create these documents and you can edit them and you don't have all that interpersonal stuff where you're sitting next to somebody and saying, I don't like this sentence, I don't like this. I mean, Maya brought such a great perspective because she's close to being a teenager herself. She's now in her 20s, but she can understand better than I can, like, what does a teen really want out of a book like this, and how do you put it together? And I would write these long narrative chapters, and then she would take them and break them up into bite-sized pieces so kids can dip in and out of the book and find a story that's like them or a piece of advice that applies to their situation. So I think it was a pretty good teamwork from thousands of miles away.
And did it give you any kind of retrospective insight when you guys were actually in the thick of it? Were there a lot of learnings now that you have a little distance from the experience? Were there any kind of aha moments?
I mean,
I
was surprised at how deeply both kids were affected by Marcia's cancer experience. Because at the time, like I said, they seemed like they were just like riding it out like normal teenagers, and they got on our nerves, and we got on their nerves. And yet, in talking to Maya and Daniela, you know, in depth for this book, you know, years later, you could just see it shaped their relationship with each other. I think it brought them closer together, but I'll let Maya talk about that and their relationships with us as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Maya, I'm going to come back to you on that. We're going to take a quick break here. We're talking today with Mark and Maya Silver, a father and daughter team who co-wrote the book My Parent Has Cancer, and It Really Sucks. It's really a reflection of their own personal experience. It's offering insights on the difficulties of being a teen whose parent is diagnosed with cancer. This is Frankly Speaking About Cancer. I'm your host, Kim Thibodeau. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back.
Cancer Support Community is proud to be a partner of Magnolia Meals at Home, a new pilot program that aims to help patients by providing nourishing meals to households affected by breast cancer so loved ones can spend more quality time together. This program is currently available in and around two pilot cities, Andover, Massachusetts, and Woodcliffe Lake, New Jersey. Participants will receive one delivery of meals every month for up to 6 months when enrolled in the program. Each delivery includes up to 7 meals designed to help meet the nutritional needs of people living with breast cancer and 10 meals for family members. This novel program is brought to you by the AZI Women's Oncology Program, Magnolia. Cancer Care, the Cancer Support Community, and Meals on Wheels Association of America. To find out if you or loved ones are eligible, visit online at www.magnoliameals@home.com or call 617-733-5848.
Cancer. It's a lonely word. Terms I don't understand. Choices I never thought I'd have to make. But there is hope and help.
Support from cancer survivors.
Links to research and clinical trials.
Help with finances and access to care.
All behind you at Breakaway from Cancer, created by Amgen to empower cancer patients.
The cancer support community is proud to be a partner of Breakaway from Cancer.
Effective cancer treatment requires more than just medication or surgery. For the country's 12 million cancer survivors and their loved ones, the social and emotional challenges of adapting to life with cancer are ongoing. How to handle coworkers' questions, how to get comfortable with new physical realities, how to reassure worried family members, or explain to friends your priorities have changed. The Cancer Support Community is ready to help by providing free counseling, education, and hope for survivors and their caregivers. Whether online or at over 100 locations around the world, the Cancer Support Community is ready to offer the support you need to live a better life with cancer. For more information on support groups, publications, nutrition, exercise programs, and more, call 1-888-793-9355 or visit us online at www.cancersupportcommunity.org. That's cancersupportcommunity.org. The Cancer Support Community, a global network of education and hope.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to Frankly Speaking About Cancer with the Cancer Support Community, an inspirational program offering the resources you need to live a better life with cancer. Now here's your host, Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community.
Welcome back to Frankly Speaking About Cancer, sponsored in part today by Eisai, Genentech, and Amgen. Today we're talking about parenting during the cancer journey, and we're talking about Mark and Maya Silver's book, My Parent Has Cancer and It Really Sucks. Before the break, I had a chance to hear from Mark about really the process of collaborating with his daughter on this book and looking back, and you know, what did the process bring out, and were there any aha moments for you guys in collaborating and working on the book and looking back over this experience? Maya, let me hear from you on that. What was it? Was it painful working on this? Was it cathartic? Was it, you know, what was the process like for you?
I would say cathartic. I mean, it was a really awesome experience for me because, you know, like I said before, during my mom's cancer, I really didn't want to think or talk or ruminate on it at all. And then after she recovered and she had a relapse, thankfully, I was just kind of something I stored away in memory and didn't really revisit. You know, like, I didn't bring it up with friends. I never really talked about it or thought about it. It was just something in my past. And so until my father and I worked on this book, I hadn't really had a chance to kind of reflect so deeply on the experience that I went through. And that was probably the most I thought about my mom's cancer since it happened. And it was really interesting interviewing all these teens and hearing their thoughts and having those thoughts sort of remind myself of what I was feeling at the time and take me back to that place and sort of process what I went through and, you know, how I dealt with it and why. And so I think it really, illuminated a lot for me about how and why I reacted the way I did and how I coped and how I'm different for it now. So it was a very interesting experience.
So what sparked, Maya, the thought or the idea of wanting to do this book in the first place?
Well, it was my dad's idea. He gets all the credit.
So tell me about that for a minute, Mark. What was what came into your mind when you thought, oh my gosh, we should write a book about this?
Well, actually, it was a friend of mine who runs a Gildas Club's idea, Anna Gottlieb in Seattle, who sent me a note one day and said, Mark, your next book should be about how teenagers react to a parent's cancer. I had written a book called Breast Cancer Husband before this one, about how all the clueless men don't know what to say and do when their wife is diagnosed with cancer. And I never really thought about teenagers. And my friend Anna Gottlieb, her Gilda's Club runs an essay contest for teens talking about how they've been affected by cancer, as I think a number of Gilda's Clubs, and I don't know if Cancer Support Community does as well. But it was amazing. These essays were often about a parent, and they were so deep and darkly funny and just, like, full of, like, genuine emotion. And it just surprised me how, you know, the intensity of feelings that these kids had facing a parent's cancer. And when I read them, I thought, oh, my gosh, it really is a book. And we included some of the essays in our book sort of just to give people that sense of what these kids were going through.
Yeah, it's a wonderful inspiration on it. That's a great contest that they run out of our Gilda's Club there in Seattle.
Wonderful. Because, I mean, like I was saying before, I just always thought, oh, they're teenagers, they can deal with it, they're practically grown up. And then, like I said, going into the research, you find out it's really, really tough for them because of the states that they're in, because of being a teenager.
Right, and all that comes along with that. I remember I was, we do a lot of work with our friend Ted Kennedy Jr., who, of course, had cancer himself, mm-hmm. you know, as a teenager. And he said, when you're a teenager, if you think you get a zit, and it's the worst thing that could happen
to
you.
That's right.
And here I was in the hospital, and they're telling me they're going to take my leg, you know, instead of, I thought my life was over, you know. Maya, I just want to go back to the school conversation for a minute, because we know that one of the most difficult parts of being a teen, period, mm-hmm. is dealing with things, you know, in school. But then, you know, certainly when a parent has cancer, that's just sort of exacerbates everything again in what we know is a very challenging time in an adolescent's life. So tell us, you know, how you dealt with that, or maybe didn't deal with that. The whole idea of your peers at school and your mom dealing with cancer, did it come up? Were you embarrassed by it? Was it something you wanted to talk about? You know, how did that go?
Yeah, I mean, I wanted my friends to know just sort of so they knew what was going on, but I really never wanted to talk about it. So I kind of told each one by one, or like a few together at lunch. And then they would ask me periodically, like, how's your mom doing? What's happening with your mom? And I would just kind of give like one word, really curt answers, and brush it off. And, you know, after the fact, they were always like, why didn't you ever want to talk about it? And I was like, I don't know. I just didn't want to talk about it. But for me, I mean, as far as school work, that was really probably a sort of a coping mechanism for me. I don't think it was affected at all. And it was like helpful for me to have a lot of activities and schoolwork going on. But the biggest thing we stress as far as schools is that you should communicate, or the parents should communicate with the school and let them know what's going on, just in case the situation gets worse, or if the teen is having a hard time keeping up with schoolwork, or just, you know, dealing just in their day-to-day life at school. It's important for there to be an advocate there, whether it's a guidance counselor or a teacher or just some trusted person at the school, to be able to sort of be their advocate and help them out if they need it.
Well, Mark, what tips would you have for parents as it relates to the school experience?
Yeah,
I mean, did you guys decide together that you were going to, you know, tell the teachers, or did you do that separately, or, you know, what advice do you have there?
I think the important thing is that you obviously need to talk to your kid and say, this is what we think is a good idea. And as Maya was saying, it's like, it's a good idea if at least somebody at school knows what's going on, because, you know, the kid might be having a bad day, or might be, you know, falling down on homework, or not able to study for a test. So it's just important that somebody at the school understands what's happening in this kid's life. Some kids may feel like, I don't want everybody to know. We heard about one school in Texas where they announced over the intercom, you know, so-and-so's mom has cancer, which this poor kid was so traumatized by that. You want the kid to understand everybody doesn't have to know, but it really could be helpful if your counselor knows. You could have mm-hmm. the counselor be a point person and just kind of touch base with the teachers and let them know what's going on. There are lots of ways that we describe in the book where you can get the school in the loop. And I think, you know, unless the kid is really, really, really upset by that idea, that it's something that a parent should push for and just go up to school or have a conversation on the phone with a point person to sort of explain what's happening, and for the next 6 months or 9 months, this is what's going to be going on in our household. Because there may be times when, you know, the kid just doesn't have time to do their homework because maybe it was a rough week from chemo, or maybe there was surgery that week. So it's good for teachers to understand that, and there may be situations where a teacher might be able to modify assignments. Some schools have a deal where, you know, the teacher will set up a signal with the kid, like if a kid is just having a bad moment and wants to get out of the class, the kid would raise his hand in a certain way and could go to the guidance counselor's office for 15 minutes just to chill out. So they're really very helpful things schools can do if the school knows what's going on.
Yeah, no, I think that's all good advice. You know, Maya, you mentioned that you told your closest friends, you know, what was going on, but then you didn't want to talk about it. And that was, you know, that was sort of that. And I, you know, again, I mean, it's, there's no right formula. Everybody kind of deals with this differently. But again, do you have tips for teens in terms of talking to their friends about their parents' diagnosis? Any guidance you can give to someone who might be listening today who's thinking about this?
Yeah, it's kind of a tricky issue because even if your friends are really well-intentioned, they probably don't know the right thing to say just because teens tend to lack the life experience necessary to have dealt with something like this before and really be able to relate to the teen that's going through it. And so they'll say things like, I know how you feel, or my aunt died of cancer, or, you know, just something else, and it doesn't make the teen feel any better. And so what we try to communicate to teens in our book is that the more that they can communicate to their friends about how they want to go forward in dealing with this is the better, basically. So they need to say to their friends, here's what's happening, here's what I need you to do to support me, here's what I would not like you to say, you know. And it's kind of an ongoing process, too, of just telling their friends, like, look, I don't want to talk about it, or look, don't bring it up at school, it's going to upset me, or I need you to, you know, call me every night, or, you know, whatever they need, they should communicate it with their friends, because their friends aren't going to know, and it's very likely that they'll say the wrong thing or just kind of be at a loss for how to support them. So yeah, that's pretty important.
Yeah, yeah. Mark, how does a parent sort of support their child through this on an ongoing basis? Obviously, you talked a little bit about, you know, how you told the girls what was happening, and, you know, again, issues with communicating with the school, issues in helping the child communicate with his or her friends and peers. Other tips, other insights in terms of supporting your teen on an ongoing basis here?
Yeah, I mean, one thing, it's important to, I mean, obviously things aren't going to be the same as they were would have been if mom or dad didn't get cancer, but you do want to try to let your kid lead as normal a life as possible during that, during the time of treatment. And you know, if a kid is reluctant to go out to a party because mom is, you know, or dad has cancer, it's like, it's okay to say to your kid, you know, go to that party and have a good time. That's okay, because that's part of life. And it's like, you don't want your kid to just feel like they have to be home all the time. I mean, you want them to help out maybe more than they would have in the past and pick up some chores, but you also want to, you know, let them understand it's fine to go to the mall. It's fine to hang out with your friends. Teenager I interviewed, I think her mom was a single mom, and she had two younger siblings, and during the week, this teenager spent a lot of time caring for those siblings, and during the weekend, her mom would arrange with friends to watch the younger kids, and this teen said it was like, it was just so great to be a 12-year-old again, and to be able to go out and hang out with my friends and do goofy stuff. So to understand that that's part of the teen experience, and you just want to make that happen as much as you can.
And so, Mark, just, we have a minute or two before our break here, but you know, again, we were kind of joking earlier about, you know, sometimes teens can go through some difficult moments and feel like they are the center of the universe. Do you think that for some parents, it may be challenging to sort out, you know, okay, this is just my teen being a typical teen, you know, maybe there's a little something more here
to explore or look into.
Is that something that parents have to keep an eye out for?
Yeah, you really, really do. And you still have to be a parent even if you're dealing with cancer. And if there's something that would have caused you concern anyway, if all of a sudden your kid isn't seeing any friends or grades are dropping or your kids hold up in their room all the time, that's a cause for concern, and you want to try to figure out what's happening. I mean, maybe in the car, because, again, you can have a less emotionally charged conversation. You know, if you pick your kid up at school, or you might have a family meeting once a week if that's your style as a family, and sort of don't let things slide by. If there's something that would have caused you concern under normal circumstances, yeah, you really need to talk to your kid about it and figure out some way of being helpful.
And keep the structure, keep the discipline, keep those all those things in place.
Exactly, yeah.
We're talking today with Mark and Maya Silver, father and daughter team who co-wrote the book My Parent Has Cancer and It Really Sucks. And we're really kind of delving in on particularly the teenage experience when a parent has cancer, what that's like interacting with the school, interacting with friends, how it impacts the family dynamic. We've got a lot more to talk about on the show today. We're just going to take a quick break here, and we'll be right back, so don't go away.
Hi, I'm Nick Nicolaides, President and CEO of Morphotech, and we're delighted to be a sponsor of Cancer Support Community's Frankly Speaking About Cancer series. Morphotech and its parent company, Azi, are committed to human healthcare, and we recognize that patients and their families are the most important participants in the healthcare process. We salute our global advocacy partners who are devoted to improving the lives of people touched by cancer every day.
People living with breast cancer often find it difficult to ask for help, and many of the people in their lives want to help but don't know how. During National Breast Cancer Awareness Month, Cancer Support Community is proud to support Meal Train, sponsored by Magnolia, which utilizes MealTrain.com, a free shared online calendar, to streamline the process of giving and receiving meals for families coping with breast cancer. Help us reach our goal of 1,000 new breast cancer-specific meal trains this October. To learn more, visit MealTrain.com/MMT and enter the code MAGNOLIAB, or visit us at CancerSupportCommunity.org.
Effective cancer treatment requires more than just medication or surgery. For the country's 12 million cancer survivors and their loved ones, the social and emotional challenges of adapting to life with cancer are ongoing. How to handle coworkers' questions, how to get comfortable with new physical realities, how to reassure worried family members, or explain to friends your priorities have changed. The Cancer Support Community is ready to help by providing free counseling, education, and hope for survivors and their caregivers. Whether online or at over 100 locations around the world, the Cancer Support Community is ready to offer the support you need to live a better life with cancer. For more information on support groups, publications, nutrition, exercise programs, and more, call 1-888-793-9355 or visit us online at www.cancersupportcommunity.org. That's cancersupportcommunity.org. The Cancer Support Community, a global network of education and hope.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to Frankly Speaking About Cancer with the Cancer Support Community, an inspirational program offering the resources you need to live a better life with cancer. Now here's your host, Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community.
Today's episode of Frankly Speaking About Cancer is sponsored in part by AstraZeneca, Millennium, the Takeda Oncology Company, and Purdue Pharma. We're joined today by Mark and Maya Silver, father and daughter co-authors of My Parent Has Cancer and It Really Sucks. We're talking today about parenting and cancer. Let's learn more about the different ways that teens may react to a parent's cancer. Mark, you recently wrote an opinion piece for Time magazine called How Teens Cope with Cancer, The Fault is in Their Brains. In the article, as well as in your book, you touch on how many teens often avoid spending time at home or with the family when a parent is going through treatment. Can you expand on that idea in particular a little bit and explain why teens may react in this way?
Yeah, it's the disappearing teen phenomenon. Yeah, I mean, it's sort of a little bit of what Maya was talking about, that some teens just want to be out of the house and hanging out with their friends and not home. And it doesn't mean that that teen doesn't care. It just might mean that it's really hard for that teen to see mom or dad going through cancer, and maybe the sight of their bald head or just them not feeling well and you know, hold up in bed rather than being out and being active. It's really, really hard. So some teens seek that kind of solace with their friends and activities and all that kind of stuff. And that's normal. It doesn't mean that they don't care. It just that's their way of coping. And other teens, there's a term we learned in doing the book called parentification, which is when a kid takes on responsibilities and chores that usually would fall to a parent. And it doesn't just happen when there's cancer in a household, but it certainly can happen. And some teens kind of go to that extreme where they want to take on all the roles that a parent would have taken on and be a caregiver to younger siblings, and if they have their driver's license, to drive carpool, to pack lunches, to do chores at home. And that's a really tough, that's really, obviously that teen cares, but that's really hard for the teen because they're sacrificing a lot of their teenage life, and that's where you'd want to, as a parent, maybe try to encourage them to disappear once in a while and have yeah. some relaxing downtime.
Yeah, so talk about, you know, again, as you talked about two sort of different reactions, the disappearing teen and the parentification. So how can parents really work around those responses so that the family, you know, still spends time together, but, you know, while also allowing for the teens to have time to themselves? I mean, what are some of the sort of communication and, you know, scheduling and practical mechanisms that parents can employ?
I think part of it is just like if the kids understand what you need from them, that's very helpful instead of just this free-floating sense that, oh, my God, I need everything from you. If you could say to, you know, if you have two teenagers and you could say to one, you know, hey, can you handle the laundry, and the other one, can you handle packing lunches? Just kind of divide chores up in a fair way so one teen doesn't feel like they're doing all the stuff and the other teen is sort of out and about and never at home. But it's tough. I mean, it's tough to change somebody's natural pattern of behavior. And if a kid is, I talk to families where one kid was, you know, the dutiful kid at home and the other kid wasn't at home. And it was hard. It was really, really hard. And it's like, as a parent, you can't force your kid to stay home or go out either. You have to sort of work with, you know, the situation you have. So it's tough. And the one thing that was interesting is some of the kids who did spend more time with a parent with cancer look back and they feel really glad that they did that. They feel they had an experience with their parent that their sibling didn't have. So that's maybe something you'd get from reading the book, that, you know, that it's not so awful to be home sometimes. It can be really positive.
I just want to add to that and say that I interviewed a couple teens as well in single parent situations that sort of stepped into that parentification role, as we're calling it. And, you know, there was some sort of snarkier that I'm in, like, I was 40 years old, like 16 going on 40. But I think some of them really felt like it was a positive way to help and knew that they really, the mom or the dad or whoever, really needed the help and that they were valued and that it taught them a lot in life and, you know, ended up going into professions relating to caregiving or, you know, cancer organizations and things like that. So it can be a positive thing.
But don't you think, Maya, that it could also, again, if, you know, if you've got a couple different teens and one is the one who's staying home and spending the time and the other one that is the one that's kind of running off, don't you think that that could also create some long-term, you know, resentment or perhaps guilt or maybe a fracture in the sibling relationship?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I can think of one example where it was an older girl and then her younger brother and then a single mother, and there was not that kind of resentment between them. I think the brother didn't really do that much but was kind of around the house, and the older daughter took care of almost everything, and including like driving him to school and cooking meals, and that didn't create a rift between them, but definitely I think that's a possibility.
And what was your relationship like, Maya, with your sister as you guys were going through this?
Question. That's something I actually have a hard time remembering. I mean, we definitely, I think, became closer as a result of the stress, like going through that experience together. But I think we kind of shared our fears with each other. But, you know, like, can you believe this is happening? Do you think mom's going to be okay? Like, things like that. But I don't have a really clear memory of what our relationship was like over that time. Like, that's something my dad probably has a better idea of, honestly. But that's what I remember from it.
Well, yeah, what did you observe, Mark?
Maya said to me that she feels like that experience made her a little more protective of Daniela, like just looking out for her. I don't know, is that a fair statement, Maya?
Yeah, and that's kind of our relationship now, and I don't know whether that stemmed from that experience or if that was just something that sort of evolved or naturally our relationship. So, but that's definitely prevalent between us.
What's the age difference between the two of you?
2.5 years.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, and what you said before, too, Kim, is totally true. Like, there can really be rifts between the siblings. You know, one sibling might feel really resentful of the others, and it's just tough. It's a tough situation. There's no magic cure. I mean, sometimes support groups are really helpful. There were a couple support groups we found, you know, aimed at teenagers, and I think it was, like, such a relief for these kids to be able to come in and pour their feelings out with other teens who understood what they were going through. And we also visited these camps called Camp Kesem, which are camps for kids whose parents have cancer, and I think it was a great experience for, like, a kid who might be parentified at home to just come for a week to this camp, and all you're supposed to do is have fun. And it's, like, it's such a relief. Suddenly you can just be yourself again, and, you know, for 1 week, everybody who's there knows what you're going through. So there are experiences like that that can be really helpful in kind of helping teens cope.
Well, and we certainly see plenty of grown adults fighting about their parents' healthcare.
Oh, yeah. It's tough, yeah.
Issues today. So, again, layering on some of those, teenage issues can make it particularly challenging. Mark, it sounds like, you know, communication, obviously, being clear and communicating and allowing a, you know, kind of a venue for that communication is one of the keys in trying to, to manage through this, and also making sure each child has an opportunity to express his or her feelings, you know, in their own way, as it relates to their peers, as it relates, you know, to school, as it relates to kind of all of those pieces. Do you have any tips, Mark, for how parents can better communicate with their teens, or you know, perhaps provide a venue and opportunity for that, or even, you know, you know, I imagine some folks are going out and seeking some professional assistance, counseling, and therapy, and things like that for kids as well who may be, you know, struggling in a particular way.
Yeah, I mean, I think getting back to the first step, it's just really communicate and also understand that different kids have different styles of communication. And
right.
You can't make your kid talk about it if they don't want to talk about it. If they don't want to talk about it, that's okay. But you still need to tell them what's going on as a parent. That's sort of the double-edged sword. Like, you need to keep them informed. And so maybe that means, depending on your kid's style, you might have, if your family has family meetings every week, keep having those family meetings. But if that's not your style as a family, maybe it's better to keep a notebook on the kitchen table and kids can write down their questions and you can give, you know, write down their answers. And maybe that's an easier way for some families to talk to each other and communicate. Or post-it notes on the mirror, like, you know, taking mom to chemo today, I'm picking up pizza on the way home. Just sort of keeping them informed of what's going on. And then also, when you give them information, don't just give them the information. Don't just say, well, here's what's going to happen, and then close it. The next day you might say, gee, that stuff I told you yesterday about surgery, was it too much information, not enough information? Just kind of like keep taking the temperature to see, you know, how the kids are reacting to what you're telling them, if they have other questions that you might not have thought of, and kind of keep things flowing.
Yeah.
It's tough. It's hard. I mean, I think we did that to a degree, and the one thing we never really did is we didn't really ask Maya and Daniela, how are you doing? How are you feeling? And those are really important questions to ask. And like many parents, we were so wrapped up with, you know, Marcia's cancer treatment at that time, and like the kids seemed okay, so we just never asked them, are you doing okay? Do you have any questions? We would just tell them, like, here's what's happening, and then go off to the round of doctor's visits and appointments.
Right. Right. Maya, we've only got a couple minutes until our next break here, but I certainly know the teenage years are often focused on, you know, kind of boundaries, on gaining independence and, you know, figuring out those pieces. How did you balance this, you know, kind of this process of seeking independence with these issues that were suddenly brought on by your, you know, mother's cancer? How did that impact you? How did you find balance and still be able to explore those boundaries as a teen?
You know, I didn't do a very good job of it. I think I tried because I really wanted to keep living normal life. And so I would have sleepovers with friends and go out and keep doing all of my activities and sports and schoolwork and everything. And then I'd feel bad. And so I'd come home and sort of ask my mom how she was doing. And I remember going to chemo a couple of times and like little things like that. But it was sort of like, you know, a drop in the bucket for what I should have done. And I think having some guidance, like if I had sat down with my dad or with a support group or with someone, you know, trusted that just said, like, here's how you can help. Here's what would make mom feel better. Like, we're setting aside a schedule sort of once a week. This is your day you're going to spend with mom. And so it's structured. It doesn't feel like it's like imposing on your whole life, but you have your set aside time to go and spend with the parent with cancer. And maybe it's a fun activity, or maybe it's doing chores around the house for them, or having, you know, meals with them during the day. Just something structured, I think, would have been really helpful and some guidance. Because it's hard, and, you know, it's like my dad was saying before, you're constantly trying to move forward with your life and being yanked back, and you really don't want to be. And so there's a lot of guilt there, and I definitely experienced all the guilt the whole time. But I think support groups can be a tremendous resource. I've been thinking about that a lot lately, and it's something I really wish that I would have been a part of at the time. Just being able to talk about these issues with other kids. And, you know, it's hard with your sibling because you don't always have the best relationship. You're different age groups. And so I think having a group of people that were going through something similar and could share, you know, best practices is an overly formal term.
Yeah, there's nothing like connecting with, you know, with folks who are having that that similar experience. That's, you know, that's for sure. We're going to take a quick break here. This is Frankly Speaking About Cancer. We're talking with Mark and Maya Silver, father and daughter, co-authors of My Parent Has Cancer and It Really Sucks. And you know, really diving into a conversation about how teens, you know, who have a parent diagnosed with cancer really cope and what some of the challenges are, and some great tips from Mark and Maya about navigating that. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
cancer, it's a lonely word. Terms I don't understand, choices I never thought I'd have to make. But there is hope and help.
Support from cancer survivors.
Links to research and clinical trials.
Help with finances and access to care.
All behind you at Breakaway from Cancer, created by Amgen to empower cancer patients.
The cancer support community is proud to be a partner of Breakaway from Cancer.
Cancer Support Community is proud to be a partner of Magnolia Meals at Home, a new pilot program that aims to help patients by providing nourishing meals to households affected by breast cancer so loved ones can spend more quality time together. This program is currently available in and around two pilot cities, Andover, Massachusetts, and Woodcliffe Lake, New Jersey. Participants will receive one delivery of meals every month for up to 6 months when enrolled in the program. Each delivery includes up to 7 meals designed to help meet the nutritional needs of people living with breast cancer and 10 meals for family members. This novel program is brought to you by the AZI Women's Oncology Program, Magnolia. Cancer Care, the Cancer Support Community, and Meals on Wheels Association of America. To find out if you or loved ones are eligible, visit online at www.magnoliameals.com or call 617-733-5848.
Hi, I'm Nick Nicolaides, President and CEO of Morphotech, and we're delighted to be a sponsor of Cancer Support Community's Frankly Speaking About Cancer series. Morphotech and its parent company, AZI, are committed to human healthcare, and we recognize that patients and their families are the most important participants in the healthcare process. We salute our global advocacy partners who are devoted to improving the lives of people touched by cancer every day.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to Frankly Speaking About Cancer with the Cancer Support Community, an inspirational program offering the resources you need to live a better life with cancer. Now here's your host, Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community.
This is Frankly Speaking About Cancer, sponsored in part today by McKesson's Giving Comfort Program, Bristol-Myers Squibb, and Morphotech. We've had a great discussion so far on cancer and parenting teenagers. I want to keep going in the sort of final segment of the show today. Mark, we were talking a little bit in the last segment, and maybe for those who are just joining us, those jumping back in with us, we can dive in on, you know, we talked about another way that some teenagers typically react to their parents' cancer is to take on the role of parent themselves, which we refer to as, you know, them becoming parentified or parentification. Can you just expand, Mark, a little bit more on that reaction and why some teens may take on that role?
I mean, I think they do it because they just genuinely want to be helpful, and there they are. But I think what's sort of more interesting too, in a way, is the way some kids don't. Like Maya was saying, she wishes she had done more. And I think that a lot of times people in a family assume everybody can read each other's mind. And I remember one Saturday, Marcia had chemo the day before, and it was a rainy, cold Saturday in November, and I had been running errands all day, and I was dragging in heavy bags of groceries into the house in this rainy, cold day, and the kids are sitting and watching TV, and I just assumed they would jump up and help me, and they didn't. And so I think I exploded, because, you know, your nerves get really frayed when you're going through a cancer experience. And I was like, why can't you guys even help me? And Maya just turned to me and in the most level-headed way said, well, Dad, we'd be happy to if you'd ask. And it's like, oh, no, I felt like Homer Simpson. But it's like, yeah, I mean, you just need to sort of be open and honest with each other about what's going on. And you know, you don't want a kid to be so, you know, parentified that they're an indentured servant, but it's okay to ask them for help. Tell them what, like Maya said, tell them what you need from them. Don't assume they can look at you and figure it all out, because it's tough. Everybody thinks they know what's best for everybody else, and people are sometimes afraid to just, and it happens with adults too, when someone has cancer, and friends will be like, oh, I really want to help, and then the person with cancer will say, oh, that'd be great if you'd help, and it's like, well, what am I supposed to do? You know, tell me something. Like, I'll walk your dog, I'll take you, you know, go for a walk with you in the park, I'll bring you dinner. What would be helpful? So it's just, specifics are really, really, really good, and I think that can help with parentification, to get back to the start of your question too, because, like, just, you know, figure out what's a fair amount of things to ask of your kids, and don't keep dumping things on them. Don't let them keep doing more and more and more and more, so they have fewer minutes for school and friends and things like that.
Yeah. Do you see, Mark, or did you have you talk to folks where, you know, the you know, teens who, again, as we said, are in sort of a fragile state to begin with in terms of their development, that they just really went off the rails, that they behaved badly, that they were acting out, that they really kind of did disappear completely? I mean, have you seen some of those more sort of extreme reactions?
Yeah, we did talk to, I mean, that's the question is like, well, would it have happened anyway? But we talked to about 100 teens, and in our sample, about 10% of them, you know, really engaged in destructive behaviors, like dabbling with drugs and drinking, arson, hooking up things, it's just stuff not good, punching holes in walls, sort of just really acting in ways that they could harm themselves physically and emotionally. And like I said, you don't know, would it have happened anyway? But again, that's where, as a parent, you just have to really be aware of what's happening. And as hard as it is, you can't just sort of shut the door and being a parent and saying, for the next 6 months, we're going to focus on cancer. You have to really, you know, keep an eye on your kids. And the kids who talked to us about engaging in these behaviors, a lot of them said, yeah, I drank or I did what I did because I wanted to, like, you know, get rid of the feelings and I didn't want to worry as much. And none of them thought that it had helped. It was really just a really tough, big downward spiral for them.
Yeah, yeah. No, I could certainly, you know, see that would happen. And it is an interesting question. Would it have happened anyway? So
and it's like hard. You can't really study it academically because it's very tricky because they're minors and it's just hard. But it certainly happens. It certainly happens that, you know, teenagers normally, you know, regular teens engage in risky behaviors, and certainly teens who have a parent with cancer, it may push them into risky behavior. And one teenager who, boy, you name it, she did it, including getting pregnant and dropping out of school while her mother was finishing up treatment. She just said all she wanted was her mother to give her, like, some sense of what was really going on, like, you know, how many months would treatment last, and what would things be like after treatment. And she didn't get that, and it's, like, so simple to tell those things to your kid, but in the crush of dealing with cancer, I think some people just don't think about it.
Yeah, yeah. You know,
and that teen actually, I should say, she did go on to, she went back, got her high school certificate, went to college, got a degree, and is now a college cancer family counselor at Hopkins. So, you can turn it around. And to get back to where Maya said, you can take an experience that's really devastating and find a way to build a life out of it. So.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Maya, we've got a couple of minutes until the end of the show here. I'm sorry to say, because I feel like there's so much more we could be talking about. But you know, I heard a radio show last year that talked about siblings and the sibling dynamic, and the researcher on this show said that, you know, she thought that the sibling dynamic and interaction with siblings could perhaps have a much greater impact on us as humans than our relationship with our parents, which I thought was interesting. I'm one of five children, so I might actually agree with that. We all have our sort of places, you know, in the lineup in our family, but I also imagine that, you know, inserting the cancer experience can really affect the sibling dynamic. I imagine it can bring siblings closer, or perhaps, you know, can create a fracture. You know, as I'm doing more than you're doing, or I know more than you know. I'm sort of on the inside, or, you know, some of those kinds of dynamics. So advice for really keeping those channels of communication open with the siblings?
Well, I think one of the biggest things is trying to set aside petty arguments because, as we all know, that can kind of dominate sibling relationships growing up, especially with two teenage girls. So, it's, you know, it's hard when you're in the moment. And I'm not sure, looking back, what, you know, I could have done to be more conscious of that. I think having some guidance or having a book like the book we have is really helpful because it sort of gives you an outside view, like, oh, this is what I could be doing. Like, I should be a united front with my sister. We should be working together, not against each other, be supportive for each other. But when you're in the moment, it's kind of hard to say that to a teen who may have, you know, squabbles with their siblings. But I think there's an incredible resource there. And just trying to set that aside and trying to check in with your sibling once a day, maybe when you get home from school. I think the onus is a little bit on the older sibling to try to do that. But, you know, if the younger sibling is reaching out, then the older sibling should react and just checking in with each other and seeing how you can help and sort of, you know, being each other's therapist, talking about what's going on in the family, because no one knows what's going on like that better than each other. There's
and
no therapist,
yeah, you're really on the inside, you know, together behind closed doors, so to speak.
Exactly.
Well, Mark and Maya, I really want to thank you so much for being on the show today to talk about cancer and parenting teens. And I want to thank you, you know, for all the work you're doing to bring awareness to the challenges that that children and families face in this situation. I want to encourage our authors to check out Mark and Maya Silver's book, My Parent Has Cancer, and it really sucks. It's a great read, a lot of really wonderful and rich information there in what can be a very challenging time in these folks' lives, in the family dynamic, in all that that comes along with the cancer diagnosis. And just diving in on some of these issues, I think, is so helpful and such some great tips and advice for our listeners today. And to our listeners, I want to thank you for joining us today for Frankly Speaking About Cancer. I'm Kim Thibodeau, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community. I want to remind you that we provide a multitude of in-person, online, and over-the-phone support. If you or someone you know is faced with a cancer diagnosis, you do not have to face cancer alone. Please reach out to us. You can find all of our information on our website at cancersupportcommunity.org, or you can pick up the phone and call our toll-free helpline. So grab a pen and you can write that down. It's 888-793-9355, and you can speak with a licensed counselor. Again, that is 888-793-9355. This is Frankly Speaking About Cancer. Until next time, be well, do well, live well.
Thank you for joining us for Frankly Speaking About Cancer with your host, Kim Thibodeau. We're here for you every Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. Pacific Time and 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. In the meantime, stay connected online at cancersupportcommunity.org. That's cancersupportcommunity.org.